We'll start with a short, interesting kliyoker, the beginning of the Sedra, and then we'll get into the main thing that I want to speak about. The kliyoker explains, Shlach l'cho anoshim. L'cho always means for your benefit. So therefore the Rabbanu Shom tells Moshe Rabbeinu, the fact that you're sending men is going to be to your benefit. Because the men are going to sin, and you're going to have to stay in the Midbar for 40 years, and that Moshe Rabbeinu will lengthen your life, because you're not able to go into Eretz Yisrael, and you'll have an extra 40 years. But if you would have sent women who would not have sinned, then you would have gone right away into Eretz Yisrael, and you wouldn't be able to go into Eretz Yisrael, and therefore your life would be shortened. So it's to your benefit, Moshe, to send men, not women. Okay. What was the Chet HaMeraglim? Many, many questions. First of all, the Rashi starts off that the people came to Moshe Rabbeinu and they want to send Meraglim. So Moshe Rabbeinu asks the Rabbanu Shom what to do. And the Rabbanu Shom tells him, Shlach l'cho. If you want to send them, fine. But I don't think it's a good idea. I'm not commanding you to send them. If you want to send them on your own, go right ahead. Now, if you heard that from the Rabbanu Shalom, would you send them? So why did Moshe Rabbeinu send them? If God himself said, I'm not telling you to send them. But if you want to send them, you can. If the Rabbanu Shalom is not telling him, then don't do it. Obviously, it's not Ratzon Hashem. Second question. Okay, so let's say that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't think that they had any bad intentions. Then why did Moshe Rabbeinu daven for Yoshua, Ko Yoshiach Me'atzas Meraglim? He obviously understood there was some kind of plot. So why did he send them? And why did he only daven for Yoshua? Thirdly, it seems that when he sent them, they were tzaddikim. So there wasn't a plot. Because it says, Kulam Anoshim, Rashi says, tzaddikim. Melamed Shehayu Ksheirim Ba'oso Shoah. They all were fine at the time they were sent. And then there's another Rashi that says just the opposite. It says when they came back, Vayelchu, Vayalu, Makish, Halichosam Lebiyosam, Vayelchu Vayavo, that's what it says, Vayelchu Vayavo. They went and they came back. To tell me that just like when they came back Rishoyim, when they left, they also were Rishoyim. Were they kosher to begin with? Were they Rishoyim to begin with? Was there a plot? And did Moshe know about the plot? And if he knew about it, why did he send them? And if he didn't know about it, why did he daven for Yoshua that God should save him from the plot of the Meraglim? Another question. Moshe Rabbeinu tells them, this chazaktem ulekachtem mipri ha'aretz. You should strengthen yourselves and take from the peiros of Eretz Yisrael. Then there's a medrash that says that only 10 of them took from the Peiros. Because Yoshua and Kalev didn't take from the Peiros, Shalohayu Bosa Eitza. They weren't part of the bad plot, and therefore they didn't take from the fruit. First question. Moshe Rabbeinu told them to take from the fruit. So why was it part of the plot to take from the fruit? And how could Yoshua and Kalev not take if Moshe told them to take? And there's another medrash that seems to say just the opposite. The medrash says that they didn't want to take the fruit. And Yoshua and Kalev took out their swords and they said, either you take the fruit or we'll kill you or you kill us, but you must take the fruit. So one medrash seems to say that taking the fruit was part of the plot. The other medrash seems to say that if you weren't in the plot, right, then you forced the other ones to take the fruit. And they themselves didn't take it. So which is it? In order to understand this, I want to explain it in the following way, with a preface that will take us a little while, and then we'll see what went on over here. After the Chetah Egel, Klal Yisrael knew that the Rabbanu Shalom was no longer going to deal with them directly. The Hashgacha was going to change. Moshe Rabbeinu davened that it shouldn't happen in his lifetime, that the direct Hashgacha Pratis in the Midbar shouldn't change till after Moshe died, which God accepted his tefillah, and it didn't change. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu had originally told him, Hinei Anochi Sholeach Malach, I'm going to send a Malach. That Malach was the Malach of Teva, nature. When did that Malach actually come? By Yoshua. Yoshua picked up his eyes and he saw a Malach. That was the Malach that should have come in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, came in the time of Yoshua, and that's when the Hashgacha on Klal Yisrael stopped, changed. From now on, there was not going to be Hashgacha Nisis, but Hashgacha B'derech HaTeva with Nisim Nistorim, like the Ramban says. Now, Klal Yisrael thought that because the Hashgacha was changing, the way that they were going to be taken care of was completely different than before. Until now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was the one in charge. And he caused all the miracles that happened in the desert. They needed food, man fell from the heavens. They needed water, they had a be'er that traveled with them. They sinned, immediately a fire came out of the Shemayim and consumed them. And so on and so on. Everything happened directly from the Ribbono Shel Olam, immediately. Immediately results. When they came into Eretz Yisrael, for various reasons, the Hashgacha changed. And it was no longer going to be Nisim Gluyim, but everything B'derech HaTeva. They needed food, they'd have to plow and plant and harvest, and the rain would fall. However, it was Nisim Nistorim, because all of that nature was dependent on mitzvahs. If they kept the mitzvahs, it would rain. If they didn't keep the mitzvahs, it wouldn't rain. That is not nature. That's Nisim, because rainfall has nothing to do with mitzvahs naturally. But Lamaisa, it looked like nature. The Ribbono Shel Olam functioned through nature with it. The Vilna Gaon says that all of the different kinds of Hashgacha, whether it's Hashgacha Nisis, which is within the Midbar, or Hashgacha B'derech HaTeva Nisim Nistorim, or Hester Panim, where you don't even see the connection between Torah and nature. It doesn't look like there's any connection. Everything seems to be just be coincidence. That's Hester Panim. The only difference between them is how we see it. But how it actually is happening, there's no difference at all. All of them are Yad Hashem. The Ribbono Shel Olam guides and controls the things in the world the same way, whether it's Hester Panim or Nisim Gluyim. It's only how we perceive it. In Nisim Gluyim, we see the Nisim. In Hester Panim, we don't see it. And in Nisim Nistorim, we don't see it openly. But all of it is Hashgacha Hashem. The Ribbono Shel Olam never changes its Hashgacha. Everything that happens, happens because the Ribbono Shel Olam makes it happen. The only difference is how we perceive it. That's the Vilna Gaon. Now the people made a mistake. And they understood that if it's going to happen, B'derech HaTeva, then we're the ones who are making it happen. Derech HaTeva means that the Ribbono Shel Olam no longer is in control. He chooses not to be in control, and he gives the control over to human beings who now cause and effect, cause B'derech HaTeva the results. So if we plow and plant, then we are causing the food supply. We're the ones who cause it, not the Ribbono Shel Olam anymore. He has yielded to us. That's called Derech HaTeva. That was the mistake. When in truth, it's not true. The Rabbanu Shalom just made it that they have to make their hishtadlus so it looks like it's happening b'derech hateva. But in fact, it's the Yad Hashem. Same Yad Hashem by Nisim Gluyim. No difference. And the Michtam Eliyahu says that teva is not cause and effect. You don't do this, and the effect is this. All you do is fulfill a t'nai. There's a prerequisite that you have to do something to make it look natural. But ultimately, the result is Yad Hashem. It's not a result of your cause. It's not an effect, cause and effect relationship. So that was called Atzas Meraglim. They came to Moshe and they realized that when we're going to come into Eretz Yisrael, the Hashgacha is going to change and things are going to have to happen naturally. In a natural situation, we have to send spies and make plans and see how to best conquer the land, because we're going to be the ones who are going to make the cause of how Eretz Yisrael is going to be conquered. So they came to Moshe Rabbeinu and they said, we want to begin now. We're almost ready to go into Eretz Yisrael. We want to begin this new Hashgacha, and we want to make our Hishtadlus. We want to be the ones to be able to do things B'derech HaTeva. B'derech HaTeva, you send Meraglim. Moshe Rabbeinu went to the Rabbanu Shalom and he said, what do you say? They want to send Meraglim. They understand that when we come to Eretz Yisrael, the Hashgacha is going to change. Should I let them start doing things B'derech HaTeva? The Rabbanu Shalom says, I can't tell you that they should send Meraglim. That's not the way it works B'derech HaTeva. If they're doing it because they want to get started with the new Hashgacha, in the new Hashgacha, the leader doesn't come to God and ask his advice, and he tells him openly. That's in the Midbar. What's going to be in Eretz Yisrael? You come to the Gadol Hador, and he doesn't ask God what to do, but he understands from himself, from his Torah learning, what the Rabbanu Shalom would want. That's what the Rabbanu Shalom told Moshe Rabbeinu. Shlach lecha. I can't tell you to send Meraglim. It is a total contradiction to the whole idea. They want to start this Hashgacha B'derech HaTeva, fine. Then it has to be across the board. Then you tell them what you think. I can't tell them, not because I think it's a bad idea, because it's not what they want. They want to start B'derech HaTeva. B'derech HaTeva, God doesn't tell people things openly. So, you want to send them, they're going to come to the Gadol Hador, he'll decide, you tell them. So the Rabbanu Shalom wasn't discouraging Moshe Rabbeinu from telling them, he was just telling them that if they want to start this new Hashgacha, it's not going to happen with me telling you directly. There's not going to be a nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu to know what God said. So that's one thing. Now Moshe Rabbeinu, at that time, they were ksherim. They were tzaddikim, except they had a mistaken hashkafa. Having a mistaken hashkafa that does not lead to anything wrong doesn't make you a drasha. It makes you a tzaddik who has a mistaken hashkafa. And because the hashkafa never came out to anything negative, they were still ksherim. They were tzaddikim at that moment. But they did have a mistaken hashkafa. The hashkafa was that if it's going to happen B'derech HaTeva, then we have to make it happen. And that was wrong. Now Moshe Rabbeinu could have given them a long shear, like I'm giving you, and explained to them, like I'm explaining to you, that that's a mistake. That Derech HaTeva does not mean that you are the one who are the cause. You are just fulfilling a prerequisite, but ultimately, right, the Rabbanu Shalom is causing it the same way he causes it when it's Derech Nisim. The same way the Rabbanu Shalom brings man is the exact same way that bread grows. No different. Except one looks that it's caused by your Hishtadlus, and the other one is clear that it's coming Min HaShamayim. But the truth is, both of them are coming Min HaShamayim. Okay. Moshe could explain to them, you're making a mistake, but even my explaining it to you, and even my explaining it, doesn't mean that I really feel like that, or that you really feel like that. Because you can understand something, and you can say, yeah, I understand intellectually, that's the way it is, and I can tell you that's the way it is, but when it comes to real life, do we really live like that? Or do we think that we are the ones who are controlling our fate? Because if we put a few more hours into work, we'll make more money, and if we don't, we'll make less money. And if we go to the doctor, the right doctor, whatever, then we'll guarantee results. And if we go to the wrong doctor, we'll have the wrong results. How do we actually feel? I would imagine the second way. And even though we can say intellectually we believe that it's not like that, but there's a very big difference between believing and really believing. Okay, and that doesn't mean we don't believe, it's just that we believe it, but it's not real. It's abstract. So Moshe Rabbeinu could have explained from today till tomorrow, it would have remained abstract, and therefore Moshe Rabbeinu said, the only way to prove it to them is let them go and see the land. What are they going to see? That the Ribbono Shel Olam said, we are going to conquer this land. He also said it's going to happen b'derech hateva. And they're going to see that b'derech hateva, they can't make it happen. It's impossible. So what should be their conclusion? We made a mistake in thinking b'derech hateva, we're the ones who are going to make it happen. It's the Ribbono Shel Olam going to make it happen. It's going to look b'derech hateva. All we have to do is go through the motions. And therefore, since HaKadosh Baruch Hu said we are going to conquer the land, and he said it's going to happen b'derech hateva, and we see it's impossible to happen b'derech hateva the way we think teva is, must be we made a mistake, and teva is not that we're the cause, teva is just a smokescreen. That should have been their conclusion. Had they come to that conclusion, they would have felt that the Ribbono Shel Olam is still in charge. Unfortunately, they came to the other conclusion. God said we're going to conquer the land. He said it's going to happen b'derech hateva. It can't happen b'derech hateva, therefore it can't be. And therefore, God tied his hands. He's not going to make it happen because he said that he's not going to do it. It's going to happen b'derech hateva, and according to that mistake, we're doing it. And we can't do it. So it can't be done. And that's what they said. Chazak hu mimenu. Even God, The nations in Canaan are stronger than God. Chazak hu mimenu. Even God himself can't make us win. Now, what were they, fools? They thought the Canaanim with their spears and bows and arrows were stronger than the Ribbono Shel Olam? But what they meant is exactly what we just said. The Ribbono Shel Olam tied his hands. He said that it's going to happen naturally. And it can't happen naturally. Then it can't happen. Because the Ribbono Shel Olam tied his hands by making himself subservient to nature. And he's not going to do it, b'derech neis. If he's not doing it, b'derech neis, then we have to do it, and we can't do it. So it can't happen. So ultimately, they're stronger than God, according to the limitations that the Ribbono Shel Olam gave himself, that it's going to have to happen, b'derech hateva. And therefore, when Moshe Rabbeinu davened, he was not referring to a plot that they had to come back and malign Eretz Israel and make the people think they can't do it. He was talking, there's another medrash that says the same thing, but changes the words. Not the plot of the Meraglim, but the plot, the hashkafa of why they sent Meraglim. Atzas Hador Hazeh means the hashkafa, the idea of this generation, that when things change and it has to happen naturally, we're in charge. God already relinquishes his control to us. That mistake was called Atzas Meraglim. It was the hashkafa that brought them to send Meraglim. But not Atzas Meraglim, a plot to come back and weaken the hearts of the Jewish people and to malign Eretz Israel. Is that what it means? Moshe didn't think that that was going to happen. But he knew that there was this problem of Hashkafa, and he felt that the only way he can convince them is if they see for themselves and come to the right conclusion. And therefore, he davened for Yoshua. because who was the leader who was going to have to lead them? B'derech HaTeva, Yoshua. He was the one who would carry out this Hashgacha. If he made the mistake, then it was lost. So the Rabban Shalom davened for him that at least he should have the right Hashgacha. He's the leader. He has to lead them B'derech HaTeva. He should at least know what Derech HaTeva is. If nobody knows, at least he should know. So he davened for him. And that's why he davened Ka Yoshiacha. Ka, the Yud is Ruchnius. His Olam Haba was created with a Yud. And Olam Hazeh was created with a Hey. And the name Ka, Ki Beka Hashem Tzur Olamim. In the name Ka is the foundation of both worlds. This world and the next world. You can't separate between them. The same Hashgacha that is spiritual is the same Hashgacha when it's physical. This world, the next world, are always connected. They're always connected with the same Yud-Kei. And everything that happens, happens because there's a spiritual cause that's caused by the Ribbono Shel Olam, and not that physical causes are the cause, the effect. That's the tefillah. Ka Yoshiacha. Now Moshe Rabbeinu said the following to them. There's one thing about Eretz Yisrael that either will convince you or really push you over the brink. That's the fruit. Crops. If you really think that Teva means you make it happen, then you can't even control your food supply in Eretz Yisrael. Because B'derech HaTeva, the only way that there's a water supply in Eretz Yisrael is by rain. And one thing that man can't control is the rain. So if you think that God has relinquished his Hashgacha and he's put it in your hands, then you can't even make food. You can't control the water supply in Eretz Yisrael. It depends on rain. So what should they have concluded from that? We made a mistake. Since it's going to happen B'derech HaTeva, and B'derech HaTeva we can't control rain, and therefore we can't even control our food supply in Eretz Yisrael, must be that we made a mistake, and Derech HaTeva doesn't mean that we're in control. The Ribbono Shel Olam is still in control. He just has to look B'derech HaTeva, so it looks B'derech HaTeva. But ultimately it's God who's in control of everything, including the food supply. And it's clear from the fact that if you think that Derech HaTeva means you're in control, it can't be by rain. You're not in control. Or they can come to the other conclusion. Then we're really stuck. Because Derech HaTeva means we're in control, and we can't even control that we'll have food in Eretz Yisrael. So it's a lost cause. Because the Ribbono Shel Olam relinquished his control. He yielded to us. And we even can't control our food supply, then how can we live there? That was the unfortunate conclusion they made from the fruit. Therefore, you don't put yourself in a nisayon that maybe you can't handle. So Moshe Rabbeinu told them the following. V'hischazaktem ulekachtem mipri ha'aretz. If you're still not convinced, and you need chizuk, you know, it's lip service, you know what I told you, you know what that right Hashkafa is, but you know deep down in your heart, you don't really feel it. You still think you're in control, then I want you to take the fruit. Because the fruit is either going to push you over the brink one way, that you'll come to the conclusion that it has to be the Ribbono Shel Olam in control, or you'll come to the conclusion there's no hope. It's worth the risk if you still aren't convinced. But if you're convinced, then leave the fruit alone. Because then the fruit can only be negative. You already are convinced. So don't take the fruit, which could be very dangerous if you look at it the wrong way. The fruit pushes you in a position that either you're going to believe this, or you're going to give up hope. Because there's nothing you can do about your food supply. So if you need the chizuk, take the fruit. If you don't need the chizuk, then better leave the fruit alone. Don't put yourself in such a situation where the fruit may have a negative effect on you. That's the meaning of the two Midrashim. The 10 of them who still needed chizuk, who weren't sure, took the fruit. Originally they didn't want to take it. But Yoshua and Kalev told them, you still need, Moshe Rabbeinu said, v'ischazaktem, and we sense that you're not convinced yet. You better take that fruit. But we are convinced. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, only if you need the chizuk do you take the fruit. We're not taking it. But you have to take it. So they forced them to take it. And that's why Yoshua and Kalev didn't take it. Shelo hayu ba'oso eitzah. They weren't part of that hashkafa mistake. Therefore, they didn't need the fruit. And they didn't need the chizuk. They weren't allowed to take the fruit. But the other ones they sensed are still not convinced. They're still not living it. They may say it, but it's not real to them, and therefore they have to take the fruit. And that's why it says, when they came back, and they came to the wrong conclusion. The wrong conclusion was, we know it's going to happen b'derech hateva. And the Rabbanu Shel Olam said, we're going to conquer it. But we can't do it b'derech hateva, therefore it can't be. And the Rabbanu Shel Olam can't help us, because he's tied his hands to derech hateva. That was their conclusion. Since that conclusion came from their original hashkofa mistake, and now it came out to be something bad, so when did it start? From the time that they had the bad hashkofa. As long as it remained only a bad hashkofa, and didn't come down lemaisa, anything wrong, they were still tzaddikim. But once their hashkofa came to a bad conclusion, to kfira, then it went retroactive from the time they had the hashkofa. A bad hashkofa that leads to bad actions, the chait already started from the time you had the bad hashkofa. But if the bad hashkofa didn't come to anything bad, just a mistake in hashkofa, it doesn't make you a rasha. So when they were sent, they were tzaddikim. When they came back, then their mistake, which came from that bad hashkofa, made them rashoyim retroactively, from the time that they had the hashkofa that eventually led them to do a chait. So it answers all the questions. Just to give you an illustration of the difference between believing something and living it, there's a famous story. There was a man in Kovna. In the time of Rav Yitzchok Elchanan Spector, was the Rav of Kovna, who was probably the richest man in Kovna. And his wealth came from a fleet of boats, of ships, that he rented out as a merchant marine. He used to rent the ships out to people who wanted to transport cargo, and he charged them nice amount for the use of his boats, and he became a very wealthy man from that. Now, for whatever reason, because of the nature of shipping in those days, no one would insure his boats. His boats were not insured. And one day, the religious council, the Jewish council of Kovna, gets a telegram that this man's boats, all of them sank in a hurricane on the other side of the world. And now the man has nothing. His entire fortune is lost, and his boats were not insured, and somebody has to go tell him that he's now a poor man. He's probably a debtor, not the richest man anymore in Kovna. And he was an elderly man, and they were afraid that the news would kill him. So what do you do in such a situation? Call the Rav. So they called the rabbi, and he said, this is your job. You got to go tell the guy that his boat sank. But, you know, better bring the Chevra Kedisha close along, because he's not going to survive this news. So the Rav went to his house, Rav Yitzchok Elchanan, and the guy says, what do I owe this honor to? He says, I have a request to make of you. Sit down. And the Rav says to him like this, I think that the people in Kovna need a little chizuk in emuna and bitachon. So I am going to organize a gathering where we're going to try to strengthen the emuna and bitachon of the people of Kovna. Now, if I get up and say that Al Tiftechu B'Nedivim, and everything is in hands of the Rabbanu Shalom. Whatever the Rabbanu Shalom does is for good. And you have to have bitachon, and you have to have faith in the Rabbanu Shalom and trust him. People are going to say he's the rabbi. He has to say that. But if you, the richest man in Kovna, get up and you say that it's not boats that give you security and it's not money, but it's the Rabbanu Shalom and that everything happens is for the good, people take notice. If they hear from you, it'll make a lot more of an impression than if they hear from the rabbi. So I want you to be the main speaker at this gathering, but I want you to really believe what you're going to say. So I'd like to sit and learn with you a little Chovas HaLevavos Shara Bitachon, so you really have that Bitachon that I want you to give over to the people. The guy says, fine. He's honored. He's going to be the guest speaker at this gathering. So they learn for about a half an hour, and the Rav looks at him and he says, how's your Bitachon? He says, really strong. Great. He said, let's see. What would you do if I told you that one of your boats sank? He said, wow, that'd be a big loss, because my boats aren't insured. I would have lost thousands of dollars. But I think I could say, Gamzu Latova, if the Rabbanu Shalom wants me to lose money, it's probably for a good reason, and I would try to learn the lesson from it, and I would say that it's probably for the good, Gamzu Latova, I think I can handle it. He said, very good. So what would you do if I told you all your boats sank? He said, all my boats. All my boats, that means that I would be a poor man, because they're not insured. I don't know if I could handle that. He said, okay, what do you think you need to handle that? He said, maybe another half an hour learning. Okay, we learn another half an hour, and then the Rav turns to him, he says, okay, how do you feel now? He says, really strong. He said, what would you do now if I told you that all your boats sank? He said, I think I could say Gamzu Latova. If the Rabbanu Shalom wants me to be a poor man, then that's Ratzon Hashem, and it's probably what's best for my neshama for all time. I think I could handle it. I think I could say Gamzu Latova, even on that. Rav says, great. Takes out the telegram, gives it to him. He reads it. The guy faints dead away, right? Has a heart attack on the spot. They rush him to the hospital. He's hovering between life and death for 3 days. Finally, he pulls out of it. The Rav goes to visit him in the hospital. He says, I don't understand. A minute before I showed you the telegram, I asked you how you would react if I told you that all your boats sank. And you told me, Gamzu Latova, and if that's what the Rav Shalom wants, the best thing for me. And I showed you the telegram, and you fainted dead away. We almost lost you. What happened? He said, yeah, I told you that when I thought my boats were sailing, but my boats really sank. There's a really big difference between believing in something when the boats are sailing and believing in something when the boats sank. Meaning that when it's abstract, it's easy to believe it. When it's lemaisa, it's very difficult. So that's the difference between atzas meraglim, right? They believe, Moshe could have convinced them that this is the right hashkafa, but to really feel it and believe it and live it is a different story. So Moshe felt by sending them that may make the difference. But Lamaisa, they came to the wrong conclusion. They didn't change their hashkafa. They just said, the Rabbanu Shalom said we're going to conquer Eretz Israel. He also said that it's going to happen b'derech hateva. And we see it can't happen b'derech hateva, because derech hateva means we're in control. And therefore, it can't happen. And the Rabbanu Shalom can't do anything about it, because he's tied his hands to derech hateva. Instead of coming to the conclusion that we made a big mistake, and derech hateva doesn't mean we're in control, derech hateva means the Rabbanu Shalom's still in control. It just looks this way. All we have to do is make it look like that. But ultimately, the success and the effect is in the hands of the Rabbanu Shalom. That was the parsha, and therefore, what happened? The people cried. Crying means that you give up hope. They cried because they felt that they were abandoned, that the Rabbanu Shalom can't help them anymore. And they cried out of desperation, out of a feeling of abandonment. And therefore, that was called the Bechiya Shel Chinam. It was a worthless crying because it wasn't real. There was no purpose to it. The Rabbanu Shalom didn't abandon them. He still was going to cause their victory. And he was going to make it look, but derech hateva, that's all. Not that the Rabbanu Shalom abandoned them. They cried because they thought they were abandoned. And now, because they were abandoned, they're going to be decimated by the goyim there. So therefore, we, the Rabbanu Shem said, "Atem bechisem bechia shalchinam, ani ekpo lachem bechia ledoros." But another medrash says, "Bechia shal mamash." You cried a worthless crying. The tikkun for that is the crying we do on Tisha B'Av. What's the crying on Tisha B'Av? The crying on Tisha B'Av is a tikkun for the crying then. The crying then was, Ribbono Shel Olam, we can't do it, therefore it can't be done. The crying on Tisha B'Av is, Ribbono Shel Olam, you said that we're going to be redeemed from Golus. We can't do it. So then you have to do it. And obviously, it's going to happen because the Ribbono Shel Olam is going to make it happen. Because we can't make it happen. So, and even though we're in a time of Hester Panim, when seemingly the Ribbono Shel Olam is not in control, he's only hiding his face. He didn't abandon us. And therefore the crying of Tisha B'Av is putting ourselves in the hands of the Ribbono Shel Olam, the crying of a baby. Why does a baby cry? Baby cries because he knows that something's wrong. He can't really put his finger on what it is because he's not smart enough to know what exactly the problem is, but something's making him uncomfortable. He's hungry, he's wet, something. He knows, though, if he cries, a big figure is going to appear, usually in the shape of a mother, and going to know exactly what the problem is and know how to take care of it and solve the problem. That's why a baby cries. That's the same crying of Tisha B'Av. Ribbono Shel Olam, we can't do it. But we don't have to do it. If we cry enough, you'll do it for us. That's the opposite of the crying in the Midbar. We can't do it, therefore it can't be done. So they cry out of desperation. Here we're crying out of hope that if we cry, the Ribbono Shel Olam will take care of it. Mamash the opposite. That's the tikkun for the crying in the Midbar. So that is my understanding of the Chet HaMeraglim. It answers a lot of the questions that we asked, and I think it's a reasonable understanding of this Chet. Any questions on this? Yeah.
Why didn't the Meraglim only came to this conclusion when they came back to Eretz Yisrael?
They came to the conclusion while they were while they saw what they saw.
So why did Kalev and Yehoshua let them take back the food if they knew that it was just going to rev up the nation? If they knew that the Hashem...
So they didn't know that they're going to use this, right, to... They thought that they'll take it already, eventually it's going to wear down their mistake. Take it and think about it or whatever. Unfortunately, by the time they came back, they were so convinced they used the fruit the negative way.
And if Moshe knew that these 10 people had twisted hashkafos, so then
but
why
the whole generation had the same hashkaf.
So then, why didn't he only send Kalev and Yehoshua?
Why did he send all of them? Again, because he wanted to make sure that again the Kalev and Yehoshua, who perhaps didn't have the wrong hashkaf, right, would have come back and said, the people would say, you're wrong. They wanted to have to hear it from people who were, in the beginning, thought like them and came back convinced that they made a mistake. Two people who didn't think like them couldn't convince them they made a mistake. You're the mistaken ones. And we didn't go, but we know that it's not shaykh like that. Okay. Any other questions on this? I'll go to something else. There is a... from here we learn that a person should not speak Lashon Hara even on Eitzim Vavonim. They came back and spoke Lashon Hara about Eretz Yisrael, which is an inanimate object. There's an Isser to speak Lashon Hara even on inanimate objects. See 1 second what that means. And therefore, we learn from here that a person is not allowed to malign Eretz Yisrael or say anything bad about Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara says that Rav Ami and Rav Asi, who gave shiurim, they lived in Eretz Yisrael, when it was hot in the summer, they would stop the shiur and move their Talmidim to the shade. Bittul Torah. So whatever time it took to move them all over to the shade, so they shouldn't complain that Eretz Yisrael has a bad climate, that's too hot here. And in the winter, when it got cold in the shade, they stopped the shear, moved them to the sun, so they shouldn't complain that Eretz Yisrael is too cold. That's how Rashi learns. The Yad Ramah says even more than that. They would stop the shear not because they were afraid that the students would complain and speak badly about the weather in Eretz Yisrael, but in order that they should say the weather's nice. Not that they were afraid they would say negative things, but in order to give them the incentive to say nice things, that's why they stopped the shear. That they should praise the weather. It's nice and warm here, it's nice and cool here in the summer. That means that even the weather, you can't speak bad about in Eretz Yisrael. The Ben Ish Chai says that a person should learn from here that he shouldn't speak badly about Eretz Yisrael, about anything, even the architecture, even the Arab architecture, shouldn't speak badly about. So on the surface, that seems absurd. There's nothing bad in Eretz Yisrael. You're not allowed to speak bad about the government. You're not allowed to speak bad about, the character of people here, right? Pushiness, whatever else it may be. Can't say anything negative about Eretz, even the weather? What does that mean? Nothing is negative about Eretz, so what does that mean? The answer, I think, is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to use our speech to strengthen those things that are positive in this world. The ultimate is Torah. But there's other kinds of speech that people can use to either strengthen and praise human beings because they are Tzelem Elohim, and by doing that you are strengthening HaKadosh Baruch Hu's image in the world, and you are strengthening what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants in the world, that people should be strengthened and happy and not put down or whatever. And also things that the Rabbanu Shalom wants to be used in this world as positive incentives and positive things, the Rabbanu Shalom wants people to speak positively about them. Because if you speak negatively about them, then you're defeating the purpose of why those things exist. Eretz Yisrael is one of them. So people should speak positively about Torah, about mitzvahs, and about Eretz Yisrael. Speaking negatively about Eretz Yisrael defeats what HaKadosh Baruch Hu's purpose in the world is. That is when you say that Eretz Yisrael intrinsically is negative. There's something intrinsically wrong with the weather here. There's something intrinsically wrong with the people here. The people of Eretz Yisrael, right, something's wrong with them. Because Eretz Yisrael develops people that are negative. That means that you think that which the Ribono Shel Olam meant in this world to be a chizuk, to be something positive, you are saying that it's negative. That's terrible Lashon Hara, same as Lashon Hara as anything else. You are weakening the Rabban Shalom's will in this world by deriding and speaking in a derisive way about something that the Rabban Shalom created to be strengthening and not weakening. But if you say, look, Eretz Yisrael is basically a place that could have very, very fine weather and could have very fine people, but people abuse Eretz Yisrael, and despite the milas here, they use those milas in a negative way, like everything. Everything can be used for the positive, can be used for the negative. The Rabban Shalom put into Eretz Yisrael qualities that are very positive. But people can abuse them, distort them, and use them for the negative. It's not Eretz Yisrael that's to blame, it's the people that are to blame. It's not Eretz Yisrael to blame, it's the fact that we don't use the things that Eretz Yisrael has to offer properly. So Eretz Yisrael is lacking nothing, but sometimes we're lacking, and therefore we can't make use of those things in a proper way. So for us, they're negative. But not because Eretz Yisrael is negative, because our ability to access those things is something wrong with us. So if you don't attribute the negatives to Eretz Yisrael, then there's halachas of when it's a toeles, and what you're allowed to say, and what not to exaggerate or whatever, and then it's possible you could say those things. That there's a toeles from them, and they're not exaggerated, and you don't have any malicious reason to malign Eretz Yisrael, then you could say negative things. But if you say those things and you blame them on the nature of Eretz Yisrael, that is basically Lashon Hara against the Rabbanu Shel Olam. Because the Rabbanu Shel Olam said that Eretz Yisrael is an Eretz Tova, and you're saying that in essence is something wrong with it. That you can't say. Which brings me to the next thing. It says that Eretz Yisrael is Eretz Tova Haaretz Me'od Me'od. Now that doesn't seem to be quantifiable. How much is ma'od ma'od more than one ma'od and less than three ma'ods? What does that mean? It's very, very good. What does that mean? Very, very good compared to what? Why? What's the very, very? So I was thinking, the word ma'od in Kriya Shema has two meanings. Bechol ma'odecha. One is bechol ma'odcha, which means all your material possessions. You should love the Rabbanu Shel Olam with all your material possessions. The second meaning is, b'chol mida u'mida shu modet l'cha. You should love the Rabbanu Shel Olam no matter how he treats you, whether he gives you midas adin or midas harachamim, you should love him and realize it's all for the best. That means there are two ma'ods. There's the physical material benefit, and then there's a spiritual benefit which sometimes looks bad, but really is for your good. Some things are good for you, but they're not very pleasurable. So you don't see the physical material good, but the spiritual good is there. And some things are very pleasurable, but they're not good for you. There the physical material good is there, but not the spiritual good. By the Rabbanu Shel Olam, when he told Avraham he's going to Eretz Yisrael, he said, Lech lecha. Rashi says, Lecha, lehanoscha uletovascha, for your pleasure and your good. Meaning that Eretz Yisrael has both things. It's both pleasurable and it's good. Meaning, it's good for you and it's also pleasurable. Because like we said, there are things that are pleasurable, but they're not good for you. There are things that are good for you, but they're not pleasurable. Eretz Yisrael is both. If you really understand and connect to Eretz Yisrael, not only is it good for you, it's pleasurable too. Not only is it pleasurable, it's good too. Those are the two ma'ods. The ma'od of ma'odcha, it's physically, materially pleasurable. And ma'odecha, midah, whatever midah, it's good for you too. Both are true in Eretz Yisrael. It's good physically, it's good spiritually also. The physical good here is good for you spiritually, if you know how to take it properly. If you don't, then the good becomes bad for you, and then you get thrown out of Eretz Yisrael. That is the idea. Okay, I think that's sufficient for today. We have class in Mitzvah Shem next Monday. Yeah, good. Okay, and then Monday after that?
No.
So next week is the last class? Okay, so I will save my parting words for next week. Okay.